All right, I am John Wittenborn, NORC at the University of Chicago, and today I'm going to be talking about the economic burden of vision loss and eye disorders, but only for people age 40 and younger in the United States. I have nothing to disclose. It's kind of fitting that I'm following up Dr. Frick's presentation because this whole project is kind of a follow-up to his previous work. So as he mentioned, his previous study on the economic burden of low vision and Dr. Ryan's work on the economic burden of eye diseases and other costs were basically combined by Prevent Blindness America to get the $51 billion economic burden estimate that was based in 2004. That is the number everyone cites as the economic burden of low vision and eye conditions. However, while that's a pretty big number, it is leaving some costs on the table. The main part, of course, is it. Both studies excluded people age 40 and younger. Also, the medical costs work done by Dr. Ryan was only limited to four diseases. So it was age-related macular degeneration, glaucoma, cataracts, diabetic retinopathy. While those are important, there's certainly a lot of other conditions which were not really included in the estimate. And then, well, Dr. Frick just updated his costs. The medical costs, which are probably likely, one would expect, have increased more than maybe the low vision costs, those have not been updated since 2004, so it's been a while. So in this analysis, I'm basically going to try to recreate both of those studies, but only for people aged 40 and younger. In 2010, consensus guidelines, first authored again by Dr. Frick here, came out, which showed that in future economic burden studies, that these are the cost categories and the perspectives that you should report. So keep this table in mind, because my goal in this project was to fill in this table for the population age 40 and younger. So the first thing I had to do was estimate the prevalence of low vision among people younger than age 40, and it turns out this is a little difficult. For the population age 40 and older, there's really good epidemiological data, but again, all of those studies were restricted to ages 40 and older. So the one nationally representative study I did find, source was NHANES data, which if you're not familiar with, that's a nationally representative examination survey. But then there's limitations here as well. So they do provide people with a autorefractor exam to test their acuity. So we looked at the sort of, we're trying to get the prevalence of best corrected visual acuity in the better seeing eye. But they do not include contrast sensitivity or visual field tests for anyone younger than age 40, and then they don't provide any acuity testing for children younger than age 12. So what we had was we had the prevalence for adults age 18 to 39, and we had the prevalence for children age 12 to 18, and assume that's this curve right here. We had no data on sort of the prevalence from ages 0 through 12, so we had one option to assume it's 0, which, you know, obviously that'd be too low. We had another option to assume it's the same as the 12-year-old, which would obviously be too high. So what we had to do was we kind of had to make a little sausage with our data. So we found some incidence of blindness data from the UK, and we used that slope to infer the prevalence of blindness for children younger than age 12 so that we'd get a nice curve that meets right back up with our NHANES prevalence at age 12, and that's kind of a heroic assumption. So in our sensitivity analysis, we test the impact of that entire range, so you'll see that later. Next, we looked at the prevalence of diagnosed disorders. We used MEPS data, which luckily I don't need to describe, so I took that slide out. And the important thing to remember about MEPS data is this is self-reported data, and this is driven by people describing that they have a condition or they went to a doctor for something, and then MEPS will ask them what was it for. MEPS follows up with the doctor, and then MEPS personnel go through and assign ICD-9 codes. So we found every ICD-9 code we could possibly find that had anything to do with the eyes. So this would include visual function, eye diseases. We've included conjunctivitis, eye injuries and burns, disorders of ocular nexa, which means the orbit, the lacrimal system, the eyelids. So we threw a very broad net. If you look at some of these prevalence numbers, you're going to say, well, those are way too low. But one, that's a function that these are self-reports. And two, this is, again, driven primarily by people saying that they had treatment or they suffered from this condition within the past year. So a lifetime incidence rate of something like amblyopia, you might think is 2%, where we're finding visual disturbances of 0.2%. Well, that's because maybe a child had amblyopia 3 years ago, but their parents probably would not say they had amblyopia in the past year if now they have glasses and they're okay. So that's why these numbers look a little low, but we know they probably are a little low. So now we get into our actual guts of our project, where we start out with medical costs. We base these on MEPs, our primary dependent variable. We have two of them. One is total medical expenditures, excluding what we're calling optometry cost. And that is that's kind of an important distinction that I'll get into on the next slide. So our primary independent variables were, one, whether you had a comprehensive diagnosed disorder variable triggered as true, and that means if you had any of our included ICD-9 codes, then we consider you having a diagnosed eye disorder or condition. And then if someone self-reported themselves as having low vision or blindness but did not have a diagnosis, we coded that as undiagnosed low vision. So we look at the two costs for these separately. And then again, we controlled for socio-demographic variables, hypertension and diabetes. As I mentioned, we separated out what we were calling optometry costs, and that's because we're sort of forced to in MEPS, because in MEPS they do not include the costs of medical vision aids, which are glasses or contacts, and they do not include optometrist visits in the medical provider component. So what that means is, based on our regression approach, no one who said, well, MEPS will ask people if you had glasses or you went to an optometrist in the last year, and they'll say, yes, I spent $300. But MEPS, nowhere in the process will that generate an ICD-9 code or diagnosis. So what we found, and also if they have glasses and they can see fine, they're not going to respond that they have trouble reading newsprint or recognizing faces, so they won't show up in the undiagnosed low vision. So what we found was, when we were just doing our regression analysis, we were picking up almost none of the optometry costs, like well less than 10%. So instead of including those in regression, we separated them out and we just add them up in a simple accounting approach. We were also interested in the medical costs by diagnosis. So for that, we looked at market scan data. We were hoping to use market scan data as the basis of our total cost, but we realized it didn't include many of the costs. The market scan data does not include vision health insurance plans. So for market scan data, we don't report any costs from here, but we do use it to show the breakdown of costs of insurance payments by condition, which we can't really do in MEPS. The next cost category we did was low vision aids, devices, and guide dogs. It was hard to find U.S. data on this, but we did find a very interesting special French census survey of disability. And so this French census got utilization rates of low vision aids and devices, and then we took those utilization rates in France, applied it to U.S.-based blindness prevalence rates, and multiplied it by U.S.-based unit costs for these devices to get our cost estimate. And there is a U.S.-based estimate of the cost of guide dogs, so we just updated that for inflation and restricted it to the population younger than age 40. Caregivers are important. In our population younger than age 40, we're assuming that there's no long-term care placement due to blindness. We're also assuming that there's no informal care required by adults age 18 to 39. Due to blindness, but we are assuming that there's extra informal care required by children due to blindness. So again, we relied on data from that special French census. The French census, a paper based on that data, they calculated the relative rate of informal care needs or requirements due to blindness, and we multiplied that by the average number of hours per day of informal care for any child in the U.S., and then multiplied that by the U.S. national wage to get an estimate for informal care. We also included the cost of special education. In this, we found a registry of all children receiving special education in the U.S., which is guaranteed through age 21, and just multiplied this by the average cost of special education due to blindness. We also included the cost of school and preschool vision screening programs. We found a very nice survey that looked at sort of, this is school vision screening is generally mandated and conducted at the state and local level. So we found a survey of state law and requirements. so we knew how many children in each state were receiving eye screenings in preschool or during regular school, and then we multiplied it by the average cost of screening that we found in a previous analysis we did based on three Prevent Blindness America-sponsored statewide screening programs. We also included the cost of federal assistance programs. The federal government spends money printing Braille books, providing books on tape, now CD. Pretty soon they're going to be starting to try to build V-readers for the blind. And they also, the federal government has special contracts to purchase from companies and employ blind workers. And you see this woman is making all the U.S. Army's combat uniforms come from blind industries in the state of Maryland. We also looked at transfer payments and tax losses. So transfer payments are things like the Social Security Disability Insurance, Supplemental Security Income, and food stamps. We do not consider these costs to the economy, but economists will say, well, this is, you know, influence the economy and decreasing the efficiency of the economy, so we included the deadweight loss of these transfer payments. That's 38% of the transfer payments, and the reason we included this is because this is one of those boxes in the consensus guidelines already mentioned, so we filled it in. Then a big one is productivity losses. So what we found was the Survey of Income and Program Participation, which is conducted by the U.S. survey conducted by the U.S. Census, asked people about their visual status and then their incomes. So controlling for age, we could identify the impact on individuals' annual income associated with whether they had visual impairment or blindness. And we just multiplied this by this average per person or median loss in income by the prevalence of visually impaired or blind persons. Then we also estimated the loss of well-being. We could not really use the approach Dr. Frick used in MEPS among children because the data is only really available for age 18 and older. So we used a different approach. So we looked in the literature and we found 12 studies reporting utility losses, which is the economist's term for the loss of happiness due to blindness or visual impairment. So we took the weighted average from these 12 studies, and then we just multiplied it by our prevalence of visual impairment and blindness we got from NHANES. There are some limitations in this. These were all based on sort of older adults. Many of them had things like diabetic retinopathy, so there's some of the utility loss recorded could be due to anxiety, other factors that may not happen in other conditions. We only found one study that was based on children. We ended up like, oh, hooray, we found a study on this, but we ended up excluding it because there was a very small sample and it just reported a far, far higher, big, worse impact of visual impairments and blindness than the other studies, and it just didn't fit in with the others. So we excluded that, but we looked at the impact of that. So getting to our results, these are the slides that matter. So if you go to we're kind of filling in our box here. So the first sort of set of columns is ages 0 to 17, the children. Then we have 18 to 39. The last column is everyone under age 40. Then we have our cost categories, our direct costs, and then our indirect costs, and we total it up on the bottom line. So bottom line, far right column is our total. We get $27.5 billion. So you can look at this in more detail to see how it breaks down by payer, whether it's government payers, insurance payers, or patients, which in patients we include sort of all citizens, basically. And here's our results for the breakdown of costs, of insurance payment costs by condition. I was a little surprised by some of these. So disorders of the globe, injury and burns are the two most costly conditions, at least for insurance payments. Remember that this is excluding optometry-related costs. This is excluding glasses. This is excluding all visits to optometrists. Then we looked at our results for our quality-adjusted life years lost. Like Dr. Frick, we estimated the monetized value using $50,000 per quality, but we don't really include this in our base result. So with the monetized value, that'd be another $10.8 billion. So if we had included that, we would have gotten a total cost of $38.3 billion. We did Because there's a lot of uncertainty in our results, we conducted two sensitivity analyses. The first one is a univariate or one-way sensitivity analysis where we vary an individual parameter from its highest point to its lowest point and see the impact on total results. So as you can see, the prevalence of vision loss, there's a lot of uncertainty in those numbers, so that's driving most of the uncertainty in the results. So that's the top. The second one down is productivity losses. Well, productivity losses are a function of, largely, the prevalence of vision loss. So that's, again, the prevalence of vision loss is what's driving uncertainty for both of these. The next sensitivity analysis we did was a probabilistic sensitivity analysis, in which case we varied every parameter in our analysis. We basically sampled these parameters from their distributions and estimated the cost. Then we repeated this 10,000 times. So what we got is we got this slope, which is our distribution of cost. This is just showing that our costs are skewed right, and that's largely, again, driven by uncertainty in the prevalence. These are our results with 95% credible intervals. So based on our probabilistic sensitivity analysis, we can get a credible interval, which is comparable to a confidence interval. So as you can see, if you look again down to the bottom right, our $27.5 billion could potentially be as high as $37.6 billion, or as potentially as low as $21.5 billion, assuming our distributions are correct, but our values within the distribution are not correct. What is driving this uncertainty? Again, you can see productivity loss, which is again a function of the prevalence of visual impairment and blindness, is driving most of the uncertainty. So the big question is, okay, now we have a missing piece of the puzzle. What happens if we add this back in with the over 40 costs? Well, I didn't have Dr. Frick's updated numbers, so I took the liberty of updating them by inflation, which, as he mentioned, maybe he should have just done that anyways. But then I did that with his costs and Dr. Ryan's costs. So it just inflation moves it from $51.4 billion to $66.6 billion. We add in our $38.3 billion, which is now including our utility losses, and we get a total of $104.8 billion. So a much bigger number, more than double. This is my most dramatic slide. So this is our next steps. We have a paper currently under review in ophthalmology, which provides all the detail and methodology of everything I just talked about. And, you know, we, in the course of doing this project, you know, we oftentimes estimate the total cost of something and then cut down, you know, cut away everything for ages 40 and older. So we have most of it ready for ages 40 and older. So I'm hoping that pretty soon we can do an analysis for the total population and update many of Dr. Ryan's estimates. Thank you very much.